Welcome back to Expert Instruction, the Teach by Design podcast, where we dive deeper into the research surrounding student behavior by talking with the people implementing these practices, where they work, and with the students they support. I'm Megan Cave.
I'm Danielle Triplett.
We're here. We did it.
Yay!
We're back. We know that, we missed an episode in August.
Would you say we missed it, though, Megan?
Summer was a little too fun, guys. And so we decided we're just going to kick things off a month later
Till September. Yeah. That's really when the school year gets up and running.
Gets really going. Our energy is back. And so we decided to be back with you all here today. We're kicking things off this school year with our episode today about sustaining implementation and what it means to actually do this PBIS, multi-tiered system of support, over the long haul.
That's right. It's not something you just do. It's something you keep doing.
You keep doing. And joining us today to talk about sustaining PBIS are the three co-directors for the Center on PBIS, Drs. Brandy Simonson, Heather George, and Kent McIntosh.
Brandy is a professor of special education at the University of Connecticut, a co-director of the Center on PBIS, and a co-principal investigator of the National Integrated Multi-Tiered System of Support Research Network. She's an advocate for supporting educators' implementation across a continuum of settings.
Heather is a professor in the Department of Child and Family Studies at the University of South Florida, the director of the Florida Center for Inclusive Communities, and the co-director of both the Center on PBIS and Florida's statewide PBIS project. She's a longtime colleague of ours in this implementation work, and she's a continued advocate for supporting system-level implementation to support all students wherever they learn.
And another longtime colleague of ours is Kent. He's the Philip H. Knight Chair of Special Education here at the University of Oregon and the director at PBIS Apps. He is also, you guessed it, a co-director of the Center on Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports. His current research focuses on increasing racial equity in school discipline and sustainability of systems for social, emotional, and behavior support in schools. Mm-hmm. We had such a great conversation about sustaining PBIS implementation, and I really loved some of the things that stood out to me, which were about really building community and how we want to increase the voices that we hear when we're talking about how we're going to operate our school, what we want our school to feel like. We want to make sure that everybody's voice is included in that process.
Yeah, Kent talked a lot about co-creating some of these systems and practices with our students, which I really love too. And I also have been thinking a lot about how to make implementation feel fresh and new. Mm-hmm. Our three guests, they all have talked about, I think they've been involved since the beginning with the center, but it's a 30-year commitment that this center has made so far toward improving student outcomes. And so how my question has always been, how do you make that feel fresh and new when it's something that's been going on for this long, you know? And the three of them really pointed out how continuing to improve your framework, even though it's the foundation of your school, but doing that with the people that are part of your school-wide community can only help to build that momentum and ultimately that buy-in to how you do school over the long term.
100%. You know, Dr. Rob Horner has said the very same thing, which is when he was asked, like, where do you think schools will be doing PBIS in 20, 30 years, he would say, paraphrase, but I hope they're doing something better. And I think we really got that from this conversation today that yes, we're still doing it, but it's getting better. It continues to improve. It continues to really keep up with the needs that our kids and the adults in the building who serve them are letting us know that they have.
Yes, exactly. It's a really good conversation. It's a great way to start off the school year. So here we go. Brandy, Heather, Kent, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That's great.
Yeah.
So good to see you all.
Mm-hmm. We feel kind of privileged to be in the space, in the Zooms with the three co-directors of the Center on PBIS today to talk about the work that you all are doing. So maybe before we jump too far into our topic today, we can lead off with, what is the Center on PBIS? What is this nebulous thing that you all co-direct?
It's a mothership, quite
yeah.
honestly.
Okay, great. Love yeah. it. Great.
Yeah.
Talk just, to us about
well, I'm
it.
I'm going to clarify that for everybody. No, it is a response to an RFA. So there's a grant that gets sent out, and it started in, I think the first one was sent out in 1997, although funding didn't start till 1998. Wow. And it was from the Office of Special Education Programs, also known as OSEP. And they, everything that had been learned about the work around individual kids and behavioral practices, they wanted to say, let's see what we can do on a larger scale. And can we have much more preventative efforts? Can we put a lot more interventions for kids so that they could be successful? And that's where that kind of school-wide framework came from. So it's always been a five-year funding cycle. But the very first one started in 1998. And so the goals are essentially to address the social-emotional behavioral aspect of it. So we want, you know, to address those needs of students with challenging behavior, provide more effective instruction in those environments, and then create this the structure so that evidence-based practices could be more effective and, surprisingly, use data to make decisions. And that was kind of revolutionary back in the 90s to be talking about school-wide data.
So there are regional centers around the country, right? So that we've got, like, I know that the Midwest has a hand in this, and there's the Northeast, maybe. How many different regional centers are there at this point?
You know, I knew you were going to ask.
Did
that.
You? I'm sorry. I put you on the spot.
Down off the top of my head. I mean, there's, the basic region, north, south, east, west kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if each region would officially define themselves as such, but we do have folks from the different universities that are representing and working collaboratively with us. We do make sure that we have the whole area of the United States and U.S. territories covered in that regard. So
it's really cool, though, hearing what you said, Heather, about scaling this work and thinking that's really what it takes is to have support both at, you know, this national level, but regional and even within your own district or buildings. Having folks that can help guide these efforts is really critical.
Definitely.
You really led that for us.
And so what round of funding are you guys on now?
Six.
Wow. Okay. This is like longevity, right?
Amazing.
Which is, I guess it's important to think about that as we're moving into the topic that we wanted to discuss today. Like, so six rounds of funding, that's what, almost, it'll be like 30 years of work. Is that right? That's wild.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that was, I did the math too.
It's amazing. It's like the span of someone's career, right? I mean, that's incredible.
30 years is a really long time to do anything. And so I think it's appropriate for you all to be looking at what does it mean to sustain PBIS, right? Mm-hmm. So beyond your mission of supporting schools and implementing this framework to achieve improve student outcomes and all of the good things that we want to achieve, you all have set out on a mission for this round of funding to specifically kind of talk about what does it mean to sustain your implementation in the face of some of the challenges that are coming up for schools right now? So maybe we can talk a little bit more about sustainability and what does it mean to sustain implementation, I guess, would be my first question for you guys. Kent, do you have ideas?
Sure.
You have lots of ideas.
I got an idea or two.
Couple.
Let's hear it.
No? When you've been doing it for this long, I think one of the things that's a challenge is we're always drawn in education to what's the next and the newest thing and the, you know, bright, shiny object and so on. And so having been around for 30 years, we don't quite have that, wow, this is new and different. We're really excited about it. You know, we've got more than one in every four schools in the country that are implementing PBIS and that we support as a indirectly as a national center through all of the state networks. And so we would love for it to be one in three or one in two, you know, more schools, the more students and staff and families benefit from it, the better. But what we really wanted to focus on was ensuring that those that are doing it continue to do it well over time and continue to see those benefits that we've seen year in, year out. You know, what we know is that the more you do of a good thing, the more better outcomes you're going to get, and the more likely people are going to say, yeah, this thing we're doing is actually working. So we really want to watch out for people who are saying, yeah, we're doing it, but they're not actually checking with a validated tool to see if they're doing the stuff. And then when it's not working, they think, oh, it's PBIS that's not working, instead of being able to say, oh, actually, we're not doing enough of the critical mm-hmm. features get into place.
Mm-hmm. You could have picked any theme for this round of funding. Is there mm-hmm. a reason why you decided that sustainability was something you really wanted to focus on?
Yeah. So a few years ago, there was this thing called the COVID-19 pandemic.
I'm going to look it up later.
in one of the research journals out there. And, you know, it wasn't so much that schools shut down for a few months / for a year and a half, depending on where you were. It was just a fundamental disruption in education, meaning that the needs of students, the needs of families, the needs of staff changed. So many people decided, you know, they said, am I going to do this virtual learning thing or am I just going to retire? And so we just lost a lot of knowledge. And then, of course, one of the things that we know is that teaching, even though, you know, it's an incredibly wonderful profession, it's pretty hard and it got harder. And so many more people left early on. And so what you end up seeing is even in a school that's been implementing PBIS for, right, 5, 15, 25 years, they don't have the same people who are trained. And we want to be really careful that we don't make this assumption that because we were trained once by somebody, then that means that we actually know how to implement and how to do it well. And so for us, that was a really big thing that we wanted to be able to contribute, is to say, how do we keep things going in the face of massive disruptions, you know, and COVID-19 is obviously one of them, but we think about natural disasters. You think about violence in the school and communities. You think about all sorts of different disruptions that there might be out there. And we want people to know that they can keep doing it. And not only that, but the things that they were doing beforehand that were actually valuable in improving outcomes are things that continue to be valuable.
I'm thinking, though, as you were talking, to me, when I think about sustaining something, I think about the things that I'm doing and I want to keep those things going. Mm-hmm. But you also just talked about how there's been an incredible turnover that's happened where we've lost some of the mm-hmm. knowledge in schools that used to be there. And so there could be, at this point, a number of people in a school, maybe a high number of people in the school, who don't even know about the thing that we're talking about mm-hmm. sustaining. Mm-hmm. Like they think whatever it is that they're doing is the thing that they're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. when we talk about this, about focusing on like, keep doing this, like keep checking on it. Is there some level of like, I guess when you start to think about sustaining, are you starting by saying, are you even doing it in the first place?
I'm sure everybody's heard that saying, if you keep what you're doing, you'll keep getting what you're getting, right?
Yes.
That's not true in education. You got to change things up. Yeah. Your community changes, your staff change, your students change. So just doing what worked for you before mm-hmm. is not nearly good enough.
Let's talk about one thing Megan and I share is like, how do we define ourselves, right? Like we think of some schools might not feel that they're a PBIS school and we want to kind of admit that's what we are. So how do schools know when they've moved from just implementing PBIS to really sustaining that work? How do you help them define that and identify that?
Yeah, well, we've got the tools to be able to do it. So you can go on to PBIS.org and look at the tiered fidelity inventory and check that out. So that's clearly one part of it. But the other part is being able to look at the essential elements of systems, data, and practices and making sure those line up. But your point, too, and I think this is really critical, It's really easy for people to get geared into this like check the box approach to implementation, right, and not really think about, you know, I make this joke, and unfortunately, I don't think it's much of a joke when people say like, oh, when we're implementing, well, let's just find, you know, we got to define all our rules and do that. Let's just find another school that has like the same mascot, and then let's just copy paste, and that'll be our teaching matrix. And that's just really the wrong way to do it, because all of that is supposed to be contextualized. Yes. And we want to be really careful. I mean, I think that so much of what we've learned over the last 25 years about PBIS is moving from just teaching routines and just teaching what you are supposed to do physically to making that instructional matrix as one thing, to be much more expansive and be thinking about how we want to be treating each other and how we want to feel and how do we use that to build relationships instead of, thinking it's a tool for compliance.
Right. Yeah. I think of that word community too, in schools I've worked with, where we see that happening, you know, when they're developing those expectations as a community and getting voices from all the people that are involved, including, you know, kiddos and adults alike.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I would just add in there that, you know, one, you were asking about like, how do you know when you move from implementing to sustaining? What about pulling that out and saying, hey, let's ask our families and our students, did this thing that we made 5 years ago and no staff are still here since they put that together. Is this still relevant for us? Do we have different goals and values that we want to focus on? And I think that, that's probably a pretty good defining thing that we're actually really reviewing and saying, how different are we and how much can we focus on connection and belonging in school as opposed to, you know, just following the routines, which are also important too, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes me think, though, that there really has to be some kind of choice or a decision that this is how we do things and this is who we are. Like Danielle and I, as we were talking through some of these questions and getting ready for today, we were like, at some point we have to be able to say that we are podcasters, that we've been doing this for so long that it's not just this thing that we're trying out. Like this is our fourth season of doing this. And so at some point we have to move from saying like, we're just trying this thing out to like how, like, this is what we do. This is part of our job. Podcast. This is part of our job. And so now how are we going to make it better? Mm-hmm. And so that's like an actual shift in the thinking that has to happen. And to me, when I think about that in terms of schools implementing PBIS, that there has to be some point in their implementation where they think, no, this isn't just a thing that we're doing because someone told us to, this is actually how we do school. Yeah. And so I don't know that a survey can tell you that entirely. Mm-hmm. I don't know that asking people for their outside perspective on your implementation can totally tell you that, mm-hmm. that at some point you have to decide as a school, as a team, as an administration, as something that like, this is what we do. This is how we do school. This is part of what we are. And so now we're not just implementing this thing and taking the surveys and moving through the steps, we're actually using that as the foundation for how we do school, and we're going to improve upon it and like work with it every year, you know. To me it seems like that's a shift that has to happen, and I'm not sure how you decide, but at some point I think a school may have to do that if they're going to talk about sustaining their implementation rather than just trying it out, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think about that, like, you know, what you're really talking about is identity.
Yeah.
And we sometimes think about individuals as, you know, building student self-identity or educator identity, but us as a community and our identity. And I'd much rather have people think about that in terms of this sort of like, we're a learning group and we're continuing together. And this is something that we value, as opposed to just, we have a banner in our school because 2 years ago we got this certain score on this thing.
Right.
I was going to hop in and just say, part of, as I'm listening to Kent talk about sustainability, part of it is that commitment to continuous improvement, right? Yes. It's not a check the box. I loved your statement about it. It's just becomes how we do school. It becomes how we describe our school community's identity. And we're never there. You know, if we think about like athletes who are constantly training to do the next best thing, like schools that are committing to PBIS are committing to creating safe and predictable environments that work for all. And they're using data to really guide, like, are we there yet? You know, who is it working for, in what contexts, and how do we make it work better by bringing in the voices of our community? So I feel like that kind of continuous improvement mindset is part of how we do business if we identify as a PBIS school, whether we use the acronym or not. Focus on always improving and making kids' lives better and teachers' lives better and families' lives better.
And there's so many more schools that people could go visit or talk to see, like, you know, talk to me about the struggles you guys had. Talk to me how you got to be where you're at. You know, I'm walking down your hallway and kids seem really respectful, or the climate seems really positive here. Like, how do you get that? Yeah. And I think some people, like going back to what Kent said, is, you know, some folks can get attracted to that shiny new thing and think that shiny new thing, I just have to implement that shiny new thing. But if that doesn't fit the context of the needs of your school and the developmental, you know, appropriateness of the kids and all of that, it's not going to have the impact that it would elsewhere. So really getting the voices from those folks, you know, that it's not just the voices of the educators, which is a great start, but also talking to the families, you know, as well, and the students and everybody coming together. And it may feel like it's going to take longer time. But I would argue that it's going to take longer to start seeing results if you just pick a package and implement a package that isn't actually specific to the needs of the school.
And I think, oh, go ahead.
I was just thinking of schools I've worked with and even seeing my own daughter's school she's gone to, and how much the population at a school can change. The needs can change. The needs of the staff and their education expertise level changes. So it also does have to be this ongoing thing that we keep doing and improving and getting better at and responding as technology changes. And you know, there's going to be new things that we have to do to define what we want for our school environment and how we're going to teach kids what that looks like.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say, is that the nature of schools is that, like, you only have kids for a certain amount of time and then they're gone. And then you have, and you're constantly, it's just like time, people, just like time. They're like, as soon as you, I'm going to go off on a tiny little tangent, just the tiniest little tangent. I had a humanities class in college, and the man was trying to teach us about time. It's like we were doing a study on time. And he said, the thing about the present time is that you can never put your finger on it. It's constantly moving to the past. And I think about schools in a similar kind of way, is like, there's just this constant rotation of people coming through. And even if you have the same student in third grade, they're coming back for fourth grade, that kiddo is different now. And so there's just this evolution that happens in a school. And so you're never able to kind of catch up with what is current, because it's always changing. Right. And so something that you can do is implement a thing like PBIS that sort of grounds you in the framework. And then all of the different little elements can become contextual. But you always have the elements that are there in front of you. And then those are the things that you're adjusting, rather than abandoning an initiative and bringing on a new thing and letting that have some time to spin up. You've always got this foundation, which I think is really nice. Yeah. But to get to your point, Brandy, too, is that you have to be continuously involved in the evolution of your framework, because you've got, everything is new. Every day is different. Your context is going to change, but you can have some pieces of your school be how you do things. Mm-hmm. And all you're doing is matching the context at any given moment, which is so great about implementing a framework versus an initiative.
Mm-hmm. That's a good tangent.
The brain, sometimes it kicks in.
Good.
Well, to that effect, though, part of this theme, right, is sustaining implementation. But the other side of it is in the face of some of these challenges that schools face. So I was curious about what are some of the challenges that are facing schools right now that you hope to address as a center with guidance on how they can leverage this framework in the solutions?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we actually identified several of them already in this conversation. And so I think in 2019, 2020, we all experienced a collective challenge with the pandemic. I think that was an opportunity for us to understand how much a collective challenge is not universal and how everyone goes through that in different paths and has different needs. And so I think through that work and through people's experiences with gun violence and natural disaster, we learned how critical it was, as you were saying already, to have a focus on a framework that has evidence supporting it and to understand where you can make that framework flexible to meet the needs of the current moment. And so an opportunity has been our center's involvement in crisis response and recovery. And so in this current iteration of the center, that's one of the opportunities that I think we are privileged to be learning more about. I think we're sad we have to learn as much about it as we do, but I think our work in PBIS at the state and district and local levels has set us up to really be supportive of schools on the prevention side, especially. But when they do encounter the unthinkable, we have tools that will help guide them through that process. We mentioned connected to the pandemic, but this preceded the pandemic, just a huge shortage of educators in the field. Yeah. And how that's leaving schools reeling and looking for, you know, the new hire. We've had issues in pre-service with recruitment. And so there's a pipeline issue right now. Mm-hmm. And an opportunity for our center is to think about how we can embed some of the work we've already been doing in pre-service training and developing mm-hmm. resources to make it so easy for the teacher preparation programs that have existed and even some of the alternative routes that are being developed by states as we go to really set teachers up for a little bit more success to meet the needs of students who they have in class, and then beef up our resources on in-service support, because we know when the teachers get there, many of them are going to need enhanced and elevated levels of professional development. And then I think, again, echoing back to the pandemic conversation, we've had a longstanding commitment to equity in the center. We've had a work group for well over a decade. And I think centering equity in all of the work that we do has been a really big opportunity, both in the past, but also going forward, to think about how we create classrooms that are inclusive and welcoming for each and every learner mm-hmm. and have families that are engaged in helping create those safe spaces for our students, whether they identify with a disability or not. Regardless of what their background is, regardless of their level of need, that they are met with the support to allow them to be successful. So I think some of the challenges, I flipped to start answering the question about opportunity, because I think it's Yay. Really easy to see how the challenge presents a mm-hmm. place for where we need to go next mm-hmm. to continue to improve ourselves as a national center.
So what are the kinds of resources that you all are looking to have come out of this work as you look toward sharing how PBIS and this framework can support schools through their challenges? What are some of the things that, what are the places people can look for mm-hmm. resources related to that? How are you hoping to share that information?
I think in a few ways. So one is going back to our kind of focus on the fundamentals or the framework. We have been really intentional about auditing some of our most frequently downloaded resources and biggest resources so that those get revised every cycle. Nice. So we have classroom focused resources to help schools get started with school-wide. And those will continue to be enhanced. And those are all available on the website through our topic pages. So kind of refocusing on the fundamentals and making sure the current resources stay up to date and accessible and usable is one of our main approaches. And then we also have some really intentional planned enhancements. I referenced earlier, we have a brand new topic now on crisis recovery that has been added into the topic page of our website. And so that has some newer resources, and in the next few years, that will continue to grow, prioritizing those things that help schools prepare and prevent, but also help schools think about recovery and response when they go through a crisis. And a newer area for us will be tagging things with pre-service, so that if you're a faculty member or supervising student teachers or a mentor teacher, you can go and quickly find resources to support teacher training in the pre-service realm. And Kent or Heather, jump in if I'm leaving any out that we want to make sure we highlight.
Can we talk just a little bit about these new folks that are newer in schools or maybe don't have a full awareness of what the framework actually is and how they can use it? What I'm thinking about them just because it's like a framework like PBIS takes everybody. And if we're in schools that have a lot of new folks, how do you bring them on board with what's going on in the school? What are some of these kinds of activities that schools can do, especially if they're looking at a high turnover within their building?
Yeah, I think some of our local districts and schools have really intentional plans around onboarding. So as they bring new staff in, part of their new hire training is an orientation to what PBIS looks like or whatever they call it in their district or school.
MTSS, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever it looks like, and really helps set teachers up for success to know how to explicitly teach expectations or to know how to communicate values or to get input from students and families, how to create relationships, because we use that word a lot, but sometimes that has to be explicitly taught as well. So I think a lot of schools and districts will address some of those gaps in early training or just folks changing careers through really explicit professional development. I think some of the stronger approaches also follow teachers into the school year with good coaching, because I think it's really helpful to have that initial training and it's insufficient. So having folks have access to ongoing support throughout the year, whether it's mentor teachers, peer teachers, actual coaches that are assigned, can be really helpful. And in school districts that I've seen be really successful, they actually collect and use data to guide their coaching. So they can really set teachers up for success with feedback on where they can continue to grow. I'm the last person who should use a sports metaphor. I think about the amount of data that's used in coaching athletes.
Yeah.
And it's that same idea. Like if we are valuing this, we have to put in the time, energy, effort, and data to help guide the process we're using.
For sure.
Great analogy, Brandy. I love that.
Oh my God. You could see Heather and Kent cringing for folks who are not seeing that visual.
That's okay.
All right, so we've got our final question. And the good news is that right now, this is the start of a new school year, and there's high energy level out there amongst, I know, our kiddos, you know, the staff, all of us who work in this field. It's kind of like the height of where the energy is. So what can schools do? What suggestions would you give them to keep their implementation fresh and really build on this energy so we can sustain this momentum we have throughout the school year?
Well, I will kick us off and welcome other folks to chime in. I think, you know, it is a really exciting time. It's an easy time to be excited. For some, it's also a time to be pretty anxious because it's lots of routine changes. But I do think that part of keeping momentum is being intentional. And by being intentional, I mean actually having a plan that's written down and documented so that we don't just kick off with like a strong PBIS celebration, but we actually remember to teach explicitly throughout the year what's expected. That we take opportunities to build those relationships, getting to know students, and then bringing their identity and who they are into the classroom. That we take the quick opportunities when families are stopping by to get to know them and then incorporate some of their identity into the classroom. So I think kind of not just hoping that the excitement sustains, but actually having a plan to have it sustain and having those opportunities that naturally occur at the beginning of the year be the start of an ongoing relationship with families and students, not just the fun thing that goes away and then we do typical school.
Right. Love that. Heather, Kent, what would you add?
I was thinking that was beautifully stated, Brandy. So thank you for that. You know, the big thing that I can't emphasize enough, it is an exciting time and maybe a scary time. And some people might be dreading it because they're coming off of, you know, oh, whatever. If they felt that they weren't in stimulating classes or it was too much work the previous year, or they didn't get enough of a break during the summer, but it is new. It is an opportunity to be new. And this, I cannot emphasize enough how important it is to start building those relationships with the students, with the families, with the community, you know, businesses in the area. We're talking like the after school programs, the convenience store owner down the street. But to also start building the relationships with your colleagues too. I mean, you're going to need to rely on each other as your own network for support within your school. And it's going to be important when we're starting to implement to help each other kind of keep in check for things. You know, when we're trying something new, it always helps to have somebody be like, oh yes, you know, to just remind you, and somebody that you feel safe that you have that relationship with to be like, oh, right. You know, everybody, you know, eyes forward, or thanks for walking, you know, on the right side of the hallway, that type of thing. If that, this is like, cause we've been out of practice, we've been on vacation, you know, had breaks. And so just as much as it's going to help the students, it's going to help the adults too in this process. So I think, you know, really taking advantage of this being a community that we're supporting each other is really going to help sustain and keep it going longer, especially when the academics start picking up a little bit more. The academics do not have to be starting immediately, right away, day one, you know, all of that. Like, we really need to build these relationships and have students feel safe, have them start to feel connected, have adults that are working there start feeling connected with the administration and with their colleagues. And that can go a long way to being helping set up a successful school year.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to just co-create our systems with students and have them see themselves in the PBIS as opposed to like a thing that adults do to them. Yeah. To say, what is a thing that we can all participate in making what it looks like what we want, and then realize it's flexible enough to align with our values and needs.
Yeah. I like what you guys are all talking about, because I've been sitting here thinking, well, if PBIS is this like long-standing evidence-based framework that's just kind of like always there, you know, it starts to feel like it isn't so fresh and interesting. You know, it can start to feel a little bit dull. I think part of what makes something successful is when there's some excitement and energy around it. And I've been trying to think about what are the ways that we could introduce it to the beginning of the school year in a way that feels fresh and new. And when you guys are talking about, you know, bringing together all of the different people within your school-wide community to share what works and what doesn't work and what they'd like to see and what gets them excited, I think that goes a long way toward building that energy, I guess, and kind of starting that momentum for the beginning of the year that hopefully, you know, if you do it, if you keep doing those things like you said you were going to do, that momentum can sustain through the school year. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Lovely.
Well, thanks, guys. Yes, we'll tell everybody. So the center, you can find the center on PBIS at www.pbis.org. Check out all of the new resources that they've got coming your way throughout the year. I'm sure they will be highlighted on the front page. Check out the topics. They will change throughout the year as they have more information to share with you about the different challenges that you've got during your school year, and reach out. There's a contact us page on that website too, where you can reach out to your local technical assistants. What do you call them? Coordinators? What do you call them? Technical?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Or state contacts.
State contacts. Your regional hubs. All of those people are all on that page. Reach out to them. It's a resource, you guys, and it's just, they're just sitting there waiting for you to talk to them. So
it's true. We're in this together, though. No one should be out there just solving it on their own or trying to do this.
Yeah, it can feel like you're on your own, but you're not. You have a whole national center and a network of people that are ready to talk to you. So thank you to Brandy and Heather and Kent for joining us today on our episode, and we look forward to seeing what you guys have coming up for us throughout the year.
Yeah, thanks for all your leadership and great work.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.